Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 9 of NML Crossing, where today we're going to be looking at something, I guess, a little bit interesting, a little bit novel. This is the first of 3 one-shots that are tying into the Cataclysm storyline. And before we get into it, I do want to talk a little bit about one-shots as it pertains to this project, because, you know, I've done a lot of research. Unfortunately, it's all been internet research, which, I don't know about you guys, but trying to find 2 people, much less 2 websites that agree on anything online, it's not always easy. I mean, I've looked at reading orders and completionist guides to No Man's Land. I've been doing this for a few months now, like almost every single day, trying just to see if, trying to make this the most, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not so much inclusive, but just the most complete coverage of this mega crossover event, right? And sometimes I see things that I don't necessarily think would belong. Sometimes I see things missing that I know belong. I mean, today's book here, take for example, and the other 2 one-shots for Cataclysm, I probably, had I not known any better, I probably would have left them out. Not because they don't tie in, but because I wouldn't have known about them. DC around this era is not very good at putting editorial footnotes in. So if there's a reference to the story we're talking about today in a future issue, it doesn't get a callback to this one shot. So it's kind of difficult to know where to go, where not to go, and which books are vital to the crossover and which ones are, you know, even beyond the, you know, even lesser than a Red Sky crossover, right? We talked about that Robin issue, which only barely tied in, but was worth mentioning anyway because it was numbered. It was numbered as part of the Cataclysm story, just like the trio of one-shots we'll be covering in the next couple of weeks. So this is where I appeal to you. Anybody out there who has more familiarity with this era, who may have been doing this, you know, following this storyline week by week by week by week throughout 98, 99, and the early part of 2000, if I come to a point where I missed something that you feel was vital to the storyline, or at least helped to enrich the storyline, and you see I'm missing it, or I left it out, let me know, and I will make any adjustments I need to in order to include it. I mean, as we get into No Man's Land, the actual No Man's Land proper, which I think at this rate is like something like episode 50. We got a little ways to go just to get to the main storyline here. But there are going to be some tie-ins, some one-shots. Not all of them have No Man's Land branding. Like, there are going to be very, very obvious ones. Like, you know, No Man's Land 0, No Man's Land 1, No Man's Land Secret Files and Origins. I mean, we know those are part of No Man's Land. But then there's like an issue of JLA that on most of the reading order guides that I've looked at is included. I believe it's JLA 32. And there's 0 No Man's Land branding on the cover. It's just the heroes like standing on top of a Gotham City sign, like a now entering Gotham City sign. So you put 2 and 2 together, you know what's going to happen there. Or you know where the story is probably going to be taking place. There are reading orders that include issues of Nightwing and Robin and Catwoman and Azrael that aren't branded with No Man's Land, because those are books that are going to be part of Cataclysm, and then they're just going to kind of go away until the mid part of No Man's Land. But in some of these reading lists, the issues in the interim are included as part of the, you know, vital reading. Some of the reading orders even include that Brotherhood of the Fist storyline that runs through Detective, Nightwing, Robin, and Green Arrow, which, you know, I already said we'd be skipping, but if anybody has read that and can tell me that it ties in an important way, or even just a passive way that is worth mentioning, let me know, and we can certainly, you know, readjust and do something with that. But I feel like my biggest question mark, at least for now, is, well, it's a book that also takes place in Gotham City, but is not part of the Bat family. It's a book you probably have all heard of. It's called Hitman. And in some of the reading lists, certain issues of Hitman are included. In many of them, they're not. Which, I mean, these lists are compiled by humans, just like me, and I'm far from perfect when it comes to compiling anything, so that might extend onto other folks as well. So if you were a reader of Hitman, or are, tangentially curious about what Hitman might have been doing post-Quake, that's definitely something I'm willing to discuss. It's just a matter of, like, where in the hell it goes, because I don't know how it intermingles with the rest, if it's just something we're going to have to do, like, as, like, three or four episodes in a row just to kind of get it out of the way or to fit it in a way that doesn't really, I don't know, break up the flow of everything else. Just let me know, and we can definitely, you know, enter that into the discussion and try to figure out where it fits best. And hey, if you guys have any, you know, reading list website or database that you guys use and trust, let me know, because it might not be one that I've seen before. And it might change the, you know, the shape of this project. You know, I'm seeing there's a Nightwing Secret Files and Origins that's included in, I want to say, every single reading list that I've seen so far. And I flipped through it because I was putting together the episode listing just to try to get a better picture of how long this project will run. And to get my little short box put in order. So I have everything, just everything's where it needs to be. And I don't need to dig, because digging is, I don't have to tell you guys, digging through your long boxes is, it could be a chore. So I made sure that was all done beforehand. So it was one less obstacle, one less hurdle I'd have to jump before sitting before a microphone and talking to myself. So this Nightwing Secret Files and Origins is listed in all of the reading lists. And I flipped through it because, of course, there's no No Man's Land branding on it. And it comes between two other issues of Nightwing, two actual issues of Nightwing in the reading orders. And I flipped through it, and I'm not seeing any No Man's Land in it. So, I mean, there might be stuff on these lists that we leave out completely, or that I just tack on to another episode because it's not worth dedicating a whole episode to. So, I mean, it's an imperfect science. It's a soft science, this No Man's Land podcasting game, I guess. Because, hell, I mean, one of the most memorable and well-known chapters of No Man's Land doesn't have any branding on it either. The Harley Quinn one-shot. I mean, that's No Man's Land. And it's part of this storyline. There's no mention of No Man's Land on the cover. And the fact that it is part of No Man's Land is probably why it's not an evergreen book, like you might expect Harley Quinn's introduction to the DC Universe to be, or the DC Universe proper to be. And I mean, I've never read the thing. I've never read the thing yet, so I could be completely speaking out of turn here. I just picture, you know, someone eBaying, you know, Harley Quinn number one and paying $200 or $300 for it, getting it to their house, opening it up and being like, what? What's this earthquake? I mean, for all I know, the earthquake doesn't even get mentioned in the damn thing, but it's, who knows? Anyway, I think I've kind of droned on enough here. All that to say, hit me up with links to your lists and to any suggestions you might have about what could be added to this project. All right, let's get into today's book. Today's book is Batman Blackgate, Isle of Men number one. At an April 1998 cover date, the story's called Isle of Men. Written by Doug Mensch, with pencils by Jim Aparo, inks David Roach, colors Pat Garrahy, letters Clem Robbins, edits Vincenzo, Peterson, and O'Neill. Cover price a hefty $2.95. Man, you remember when $3 was like the top of the end of the comics pricing structure? Ooh. Okay. Now we open our story, and it is 6:52 p.m. on the day where the very bad thing happens. So, going by my watch, which, I mean, I can't tell time or read a calendar, I think we've got 11 or so minutes of normalcy left. We're at Blackgate Penitentiary, the home of 2,342 men, mostly inmates, though there are 273 guards. Now, among those inmates, we got a man named Jared Manx. He's currently on death row, And he's only got a couple of hours left before he gets his lethal injection. He's scheduled to make his grand exit at 12:01 a.m. the following day. Now, he's being visited by his lawyer as well as a nun. Now, he was arrested and convicted for multiple murders. He killed a woman and two children, though he continues to maintain his innocence. Now, his lawyer believes him. She believes him and always has. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there's only so much she can do. The nun is here to spiritually guide him to his heavenly reward, I guess. I suppose our, you know, spiritual mileage may vary when it comes to a murderer who won't admit that he murdered people. If in fact he did, who knows? We'll work our way through this as we go. From here, we jump ahead 6 entire minutes, and we get ourselves a bit of a tour of some notable residents of Blackgate. We've got Catman Thomas Blake, the Black Spider, KG Beast, Clue Master, Faceless, and Steeljacket. And I've only heard of a few of those. Actually, I've heard of 4 of them. I don't know who Faceless or Steeljacket are, but maybe we'll get to know them better as we... Well, not go through this issue, but maybe through the overall arc. I don't know. We also get to bear witness to some good old-fashioned police brutality when, at 6:59 p.m., a prison guard enters some weasel cell, who I guess might be named Weasel, because he calls him Weasel a few times, and he proceeds to beat the holy hell out of him with his billy club. Then, at 7:01 p.m., we return to Jared Manx, who asks his nun if she's working on cooking up any miracles for him. And she assures him that she is only here to help in salvaging his mortal soul. Which, I guess it's the thought that counts, right? Then, the clock ticks over to 7:03, and the very bad thing happens. All non-Wayne-owned buildings in the Gotham area shake and begin to pancake. Blackgate? Well, Blackgate ain't a Wayne-owned property. And so, the joint begins to crumble. Manx's cell door opens, and perhaps this is the miracle he was asking for. Well, somewhere nearby, the KG Beast's cell also kind of opens, or he's able to bust out anyway, so maybe not so much of a miracle, because the Beast will loom large throughout the rest of this issue. We jump to a minute later when an 80-foot tidal wave smashes into the prison, and it actually pretty much covers the entire island that Blackgate's on. And so the joint begins to flood. And I probably ought to describe the design of this prison, since this is audio. It's like a tiered system. It's like a huge empty space with levels, and each one is populated with like a row of small cells. It like goes around in a square. So as the place floods, those cells on the bottom tiers threaten to fill first, obviously. Seeing this, a guard at the master switch goes to pull it, which would release and, you know, save the lives of many of the inmates. He, however, is nailed by an oddly focused burst of water. It's like when Asriel was hit by that water main or whatever the hell it was in his book. It was just like, it's completely dry and like one jet of water. So maybe there's like a fire hydrant. I don't know. An inmate pleads with the freed Manx to help him get out. And our, I guess we can call him our hero, he asks his lawyer, Nun, to tread water for a bit while he tries something. Worth noting, the nun can't swim. Manx dives deep into the drink and makes his way to that master switch. He forces the thing over. However, due to the structural and electrical damage the building has suffered, not all of the cells actually open. So we get kind of a mixed bag here. Some inmates manage to get out, and some don't, and they drown. After pulling that switch, Manx returns, and he helps ferry the nun over to the stairs leading up to the next tier. The lawyer is able to make it there under her own power. She can swim. Now, as our crew makes their way up to Tier 1, I'm guessing Death Row is located on Tier 0 then? Or maybe this is more that liquefaction, sinking buildings down? I don't know. Anyway, Manx and company, they find themselves on this next tier and staring down the barrels of several officer-drawn pieces. The lawyer pleads with the prison guards not to shoot them, including Manx. You know, don't shoot him either, because he saved their lives. Unfortunately, before cooler heads can prevail, the Manx crew is followed up those stairs by a bunch of, I suppose we can say, less reasonable prisoners. And so, it's time for a riot. Punches are thrown, shots are fired, it's a complete mess. Now Manx, he uses this chaotic scene to his advantage, and he guides his little crew through and hopes to get them to safety. Amid the riot, another master switch is breached, and so even more inmates are freed, including the KG Beast. I thought he freed himself a few pages ago. I mean, he punched through the damn bars. I don't know. Now, KG Beast, he immediately pulls focus, positioning himself as our main antagonist. Now, he starts just beating the holy hell out of everybody. Good, bad, and different. He's just punching with his, you know, weird handless arm. Now, at that moment, across the bay, harbor, whatever small body of water, we check in with Gotham City and the GCPD headquarters specifically. There we got Babs, who is still giving orders. She tells officers to head out to loot nearby hardware stores to secure a bunch of hard hats and whatnot, and, you know, to hand out to folks. Just then, Blackgate calls in, or radios in, I suppose. That's a guard who looks like he could be Alfred's stunt double. He's there pleading with the GCPD for assistance. Now, he tries recounting everything that's gone down since the quake, but is soon found by the KG Beast, who, I suppose we might assume, kills him. Barbara asks an officer to try to put together a SWAT armory and to get some helicopters in the sky and headed Blackgate way. Now, back at Blackgate, we rejoin Manx, who's tending to the sister's wounds with some iodine or something. It's a red-brown liquid stuff. I don't know. Now, he's barricaded them all in a room. However, the furniture he pushed up against the door doesn't prove to be strong enough to keep the KG Beast out. Once inside the room, the Beast and Manx start fighting, with our heroic death row inmate getting the worst of it. I mean, KG Beast is just wiping the floor with him. He hurls him through a window, even. Manx, he shouts over to the women, telling them to hightail it back to the cell block for now, where they could be relatively safe, at least not in the path of the KG Beast's rage, right? Now, the Beast begins to give chase, but he's cut off by a missile dropkick courtesy of Catman. Now, Blake's entry into the fracas proves to be enough of a distraction to allow Manx and company to slip the grip of the KG Beast, at least for now. From here, we jump over to... Who's this guy? Maybe you can help me out here. Who's that guy, the guy we're supposed to be talking about? Oh yeah, Batman. Batman shows up. It's 10:03 p.m. when our actual hero rises out of the drink. So, I guess it's been exactly 3 hours to the minute since the very bad thing happened. Now he's listening to his cowl radio, which is picking up communique between Barbara Gordon and some nearby hovering helicopters. In the distance, at the island, he can see the rioting inmates firing guns on the choppers. Back inside Blackgate, we rejoin Manx and company, who are alone in the cell block attempting to catch their breath. Now the nun, well, she's somewhat surprised that Manx has done so much to keep them safe. And he continues to insist that he's actually a good guy. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything to be here. He was falsely imprisoned, falsely accused, falsely whatever, right? Well, I suppose we shall see, right? Back to the bat. He decides to make his way over to Blackgate via a newly risen ridge of faultline land, acting as a literal land bridge between Gotham and the Isle of Men. Now, this land bridge, it's worth noting, is being used by dozens of the inmates who are trying to escape the island, as you might expect them to do. Batman's able to contact the choppers on his radio, and he refers to himself as Daniel One. I'm completely ignorant to whether or not that name holds any significance. Any Googling of Daniel One brings up Bible stories, and none of which have any kind of application here. Daniel One Batman doesn't bring up much either, so I don't know. Now, Batman, he gives the lay of the land, and he tells them that he's got everything under control, so just stay hovering, you know, don't get shot, I got everything on the ground here. And so, over the course of the next several pages, we've got Batman beating up a bunch of baddies. Meanwhile, the KG Beast has located Manx and the gang, and he decides to squish them under, like, a giant stone beam that was, like, leaning up against, you know, a tier above. Manx's Manxy sense begins to tingle, and he can see it coming, so he leaps to his feet, to attempt to keep the beam from crushing the ladies. Back outside, Batman tosses a smoke grenade to provide a bit of a distraction so that the choppers can attempt to land on the roof of the place and maybe start taking some prisoners. Through the haze and smoke, one of the helicopterers thinks he can make out the shape of a humanoid bat. But, nah, couldn't be, because, you know, Batman doesn't exist. There ain't no such thing. He's just an urban legend. Back inside, Batman happens across the KG Beast. Just then, an aftershock hits. Manx pleads with the ladies to get out of Dodge. He can only hold this beam up for so long, but they refuse to leave his side here. After all he's done for them, they don't want to leave him to die. And it's here where he decides to... come clean about everything? Maybe? He tells the ladies that, he's been lying to them this whole time. He did it. He killed the woman and those children. We get a bit of a cherry on top of this sundae with the revelation that, they were his kids. So, even worse. The nun and the lawyer, they begin to back up, rightfully creeped out by this confession. At this point, Batman swoops in after having beaten KG Beast off panel, and he swings the ladies to safety. Now, the lawyer isn't sure what to make of any of this, since, there ain't no such thing as a Batman. In any event, Batman saves the ladies, and the GCPD regains control of the island. Oh, and also, that aftershock a few pages ago, it caused that land bridge to recede back into the drink, so we're back to having no way off the island. Now, we close out the issue with the nun and the lawyer talking about Manx and his lie. The nun... well, she's still not convinced. Not that Manx wasn't a liar, because clearly he is a liar, but exactly what was it that he lied about? Was he lying about his innocence all along and he actually was a killer? Or was he innocent and just said he was a killer in order to save their lives, to get them to back away from him? Whatever the case, Manx did in fact die. He was crushed to death at 12:01 a.m. Is fate accompli the right thing to say? I don't know. Next episode, the cataclysmic content continues with Shadow of the Bat number 74. But let's talk about this one shot, which I felt was pretty good. Now, if you ever listened to X-Lapsed, this would kind of fall into the column that I'd normally file issues of the Wolverine book under. In that it was good, I enjoyed it, and I recommend it, but unfortunately, there isn't much to say about it. I mean, the entire issue could be summed up in a one-sentence editorial footnote, which again isn't an indictment on its quality, it's just kind of a side story. I mean, it does progress the story a bit. It gets Batman out of the drink, and it potentially allows for some inmates to head into Gotham proper who, I don't know whether they'll loom large or not in the No Man's Land story. I don't remember if Catman had anything to do with that or the Black Spider, but for all I know, they do. But other than that, there isn't much to it. I suppose we could talk about Manx and his, ambiguous innocence, but he's a one and done. I mean, we've never seen or heard of him before this, and he'll never be mentioned again. I suppose maybe there's a measure of poignance to that. You know, just not anything that would facilitate much in the way of discussion, no matter how hard I force it, which I will attempt to do now. I'll say that his moral dubiousness and the question of when he was lying was pretty neat. And his death at the exact moment that he was slated for execution was clever. But that's kind of it. I mean, his lawyer and the nun didn't even get names. They're just his counsel and his, you know, spiritual guide. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of cool that this unknown got a little bit of a shine, since things like natural disasters, false imprisonments, just all-around bad luck, they happen, and they can happen to anybody. But woven into the deeper tapestry of the Cataclysm storyline, it's kind of just a thing that happened, right? And again, I suppose there is some poignance in that. And again, I did enjoy it. But, despite my talking in circles for the last little while, what more can you really say about it, right? As much as I hate to do it, how about we hop across the table and talk a little bit about the aught? As you guys know, I'm always uncomfortable to discuss and, for lack of a better term, pass judgment on aught. We got Jim Aparo here, who in my opinion, and likely the wider opinion among comic fans, is royalty, right? He's one of the more iconic Batman artists in history. Here, there's something a little bit off about it, in my opinion, and I don't think it has anything to do with Aparo. I just don't think his work was meant for this sort of mid-late 90s paper stock, this slick paper that I hate. I've been on record saying how much the art in most mainstream comics kind of plummeted due to this awful paper stock that we started to see. I think we started to see it around the Age of Apocalypse, so 95-ish. And it would stick around until like 98, 99. And it was just awful. It was like magazine paper, but like worse. And, yeah, this paper does very few favors for very few artists. And Aparo is unfortunately among those artists. And I mean, I hated it when it was introduced. And looking back now, I still hate this paper. It was like in the industry's attempt to like legitimize themselves and put themselves on the same level as like widely read periodicals and magazines, they only made themselves look more amateur. And it's unfortunate. Because, like, Aparo's work, Aparo's great, but on this slick paper, it almost feels like a juxtapositional experiment. And, I mean, we're going to be getting a lot of Aparo in the coming weeks. Hell, I mean, this isn't even the first time we're seeing his work during this project. But his more classic 80s style on this cheap-feeling, glossy, too-shiny-to-snap-a-picture-of paper, it makes it look old, like, and like totally out of place. And yes, Aparo's generation was not the late 90s, but his art is, like I said, it's iconic and it's timeless and it's evergreen, but here it just looks out of place. And again, it's not bad. It's still Aparo, but I feel like it would definitely be more at home on a, like a toothier stock. Maybe not necessarily going all the way to newsprint, but something a little, with a little bit more grit to it. Overall, this is a 1-1 shot down. We've got two to go during the Cataclysm story arc. One of those will be the Arkham Asylum flavored issue, where, like we've seen, how it affected Blackgate. Then we're going to see how it affects Arkham. At least I believe so. It's called Arkham something, something, something. So I'm guessing it's going to be similar in tone, just at the other place. Boy, am I rambling at this point. This was a good issue, mostly unmemorable. Cards on the table, I wrote this script about a week ago and actually needed to refresh myself because I pretty much forgot I read it. It's not an indictment on the quality, that's probably me. But still, worth a read, worth a look, and a good flavor for the Cataclysm storyline. Now, before we cut out of here, let's dip into the NML bag here, where we're going to meet a new friend. This is an email from Eric K., and Eric says, "Chris, I'm new to your podcast and was referred to it by members of another podcast." Which, wow. I mean, that's always so cool to get a referral. This is a new project, and I don't expect anybody to know about anything I do. So, to know that someone out there, whether they're people I know or people I don't know, thought enough about it or just thought about it at all to refer folks over is just amazing. So whatever show that was, a huge, huge thank you to them, and a huge thank you to Eric for giving the show a shot. Eric continues, "I really enjoy your NML series coverage and plan on listening to your Titans series. In the past year, I purchased the No Man's Land omnibuses and have not found the time to read them. But now, following along with your series, I can finally start to read along with each episode of the podcast. Thank you for doing this series, and I look forward to future episodes." And, well, thank you. Thank you so much. And not to sound completely sappy, but It's stuff like this, missives like this that make, you know, this jaded heart grow three sizes. You know, it really does mean a lot when folks give the show a shot and write in and intend to continue along with it. You know, I am usually in such a place mentally where I can't even wrap my head around that kind of idea that someone would listen to me and be like, yeah, I want more of this. So it truly does mean a whole lot to me. And I say that with zero snark or sarcasm. That really sincerely and genuinely affects me. So thank you so much, Eric. I hope to hear more from you as we work our way through this project. And I hope we have many wonderful discussions in the future. So thanks again. Welcome. And thanks to whoever referred you. That, like I said, it means a lot to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And that's a heck of a high note to go out on, so I think I will. Before I go, I just want to thank you all so much for sharing some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it.